Next, brought to you this morning by Tulsa Bone and Joint at Bartlesville and Shane Phillips Medical Center, working together to keep you on the move by Tallgrass Motors and by First Baptist Church. And we're going to salute some veterans this morning when we talk with Joe Todd coming up in just a moment.
Complete orthopedic care with a collaborative approach. Tulsa Bone and Joint and Shane Phillips Medical Center have teamed up to deliver a proactive approach for the prevention, care, and treatment of all bone and joint injuries. Depend on our compassionate surgeons and medical staff for all your family's orthopedic needs. Call today for your appointment, 918-214-8232. Tulsa Bone and Joint of Bartlesville and Jane Phillips Medical Center, working together to keep you on the move.
And again, welcoming in Joe Todd as we get into a community connection. Joe, before I know, you've got quite a few veteran interviews we want to talk about, but this is the date, 1942, that Lieutenant Edward Butch O'Hare became the U.S. Navy's first flying ace of World War II, shooting down five Japanese bombers while defending the aircraft carrier, the USS Lexington, in the South Pacific. Of course, O'Hare, a Medal of Honor winner, killed in action in 43. And yes, O'Hare Airport in Chicago is named after him. There is a veterans display there if you can find it in the airport.
Yes.
This is not the anniversary of Iwo Jima, but it's the closest date on the calendar that you and I could get together and talk about all the veterans from Oklahoma and many of them that you have interviewed that served in that particular conflict.
That's correct.
Yeah. How many interviews did you conduct with Iwo Jima veterans? And I know some of them you interviewed that were in several specific conflicts.
Yes. Probably about between 50 and 60 interviews.
That's great.
About Iwo Jima.
That is fantastic, yes. Because their individual stories collectively make up what's in the history books, but every one of them got a special story to tell.
Yes, yes.
I'm just going to back out and let you kind of describe some of these folks. I know several are area people,
yes,
but
yes.
You also travel around a pretty good size radius to talk with veterans wherever you can make contact with
them. That's
correct. Yeah.
Well, a little background. Iwo Jima is halfway between Saipan and Tokyo.
Okay.
And we were launching our B-29s to bomb Tokyo,
mm-hmm.
and the damaged airplanes could not get back to Saipan.
They had to go on to China.
Many
of them. Yeah.
Go on to China.
Yeah.
Or on the way back, they had to ditch. And so the Japanese had built an airfield on Iwo Jima.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought, we need Iwo Jima for the airplanes that couldn't make it back.
We'd like to reuse those pilots and aircraft if we can.
Yes, yes, yes. And so that was the decision.
Yeah.
There were 20,000 Japanese on Iwo Jima under the command of General Kuribayashi. And Admiral Chester Nimitz was in charge of the Navy.
Yeah.
And General Harry Schmidt was in charge of the Marines.
Okay.
When we decided to take Iwo Jima.
Two big names in World War II history.
Two big names. Before they started, Earl Vaughn lives in Bartlesville.
Mm-hmm.
Or he lived in Bartlesville. And he was a member of VMD 354, a photograph unit.
Okay.
And he flew over Iwo Jima taking photographs, and they made the invasion maps from his photographs to invade Iwo Jima.
Wow, that local connection, that's marvelous.
Yes. And then before the invasion, they bombed Iwo Jima for 10 days,
which you would think, based on past performance, would loosen the enemy quite
a
bit.
Yes. Don Frazier, who lived in Bartlesville, flew the TBF bomber off the USS Sergeant Bay, bombed Iwo Jima for 10 days.
Yeah.
And then Ted Kirkendall, who lived in Tulsa, was on the Nevada. And the Nevada bombed Iwo Jima for 10 days. And Elmer McSpadden from Bartlesville flew the F-4F Wildcat off the carrier Macon Island and also bombed Macon Island for 10 days.
Boy, we got a lot of performance out of the F-4, didn't
yes.
we?
Yes. We had battleships, cruisers, everything bombing Iwo Jima for 10 days solid.
And naval shelling as well, didn't we?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We had the battleship New York, the Nevada, the Missouri. All these ships were bombing Iwo Jima constantly.
Yeah.
To loosen up. And after 10 days, they told the Marines it's going to be a cakewalk. We're going to be on Iwo Jima 3 days and head to Okinawa.
What a great plan.
Yes, what a great plan.
Didn't quite work out that way.
Didn't quite work out that way. Let me see.
Yeah.
Lloyd Densmore.
Okay.
Now, he still lives in Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
He was a member of the 2nd Armored Amphibious Tank Battalion.
Okay.
And they were the first Marines on the beach. Their tanks were in an LST. They got on the beach and they came up on this hill of volcanic sand, couldn't get through it. And they said, get back off the beach, and his tank wouldn't move. It was stuck in the sand.
Wow.
All the tanks left except his. They were the first Marines on the beach.
And, well, yeah, you want those tanks out there first because of the firepower that they've
yes.
got, and you
yes.
can you can put troops behind it
yes.
with a position of relative safety.
Yes. But Iwo Jima is all this volcanic sand,
yeah.
and they couldn't move the tanks. And they were there for about an hour, and they got out, tried to dig a foxhole, and the Japanese attacked.
Wow.
They came out of the caves.
Yep.
And he said, finally, they got the tank, and they got the hell out of there.
Gee.
And now R.L. George still lives in Bartlesville.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a member of the 4th Marine Division. And he said they were on this troop ship. And they were told it's a cakewalk, no problem. They climbed down the cargo net into the Higgins boats and headed toward the beach.
Mm-hmm.
So when they got to the beach, the Japanese met them, and it was a slaughterhouse.
Gee.
And he said, we got out in the water up to our armpits, trying to get to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the Japanese hit. He said men were dying all around us. And he said, when I got on the beach, we tried to dig a foxhole. But you can't dig a foxhole in that volcanic sand.
No, it fills right in right afterwards.
Fills right in. And he said they were just death and destruction all around them. And he said the noise was horrendous.
That's one thing that I have read in several accounts, that it was just deafening on the
yes,
beach.
Yes, because the Japanese had some big guns in Mount Suribachi in caves.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't use the guns until the invasion. So we had no idea these guns were there. And they opened up on the ships.
How much preparation did the Japanese have to go through to get that island fortified the way it was? It had to have been months and months.
Yes. Now, Bernie Weintraub, who lived in Bartlesville,
mm-hmm.
he cleared caves.
Okay.
And he actually went in some of the caves, and he said the caves were 4 and 5 stories high, the system, in Mount Suribachi. So it had taken, I don't know how many years, to dig those caves through that volcanic rock.
Wow.
But they were well prepared.
Yeah. That was probably the most fortified location for the Japanese during
yes.
the Pacific yes. Campaign.
Yes. Now, Mr. George said they finally got to the airfield, and it was surrounded by bunkers.
Mm-hmm.
And the Japanese had them fortified.
Yeah.
And they had to take the bunkers out. And he said it took almost 20 days to take the airfield.
Well, and you don't want to bomb real close to the airfield. The airfield is your objective. That's what
yes.
you're trying to,
yes.
to keep on hold.
Yes. And he said when they did get the airfield, they had to make repairs. While they were making repairs, a B-29 landed in the middle of the battle.
Mm-hmm.
A B-29 that had been damaged over Japan, and it landed during the battle.
And I have no doubt that it was a either land or ditch sort of situation.
Yes, yes,
you know.
Yes, yes. And then after that, after it was the battle, the island hadn't been secured yet, Mr. George was put on the burial detail.
That was awful work.
Yes.
Yeah.
He said when they found the Japanese dead, they just put them in a grave marked enemy soldier.
Mm-hmm.
When they found a soldier or a Marine dead, they had to make sure the body was identified, bury it, and mark the grave.
Sure.
And that was his part of his job.
And I'm sure, you know, it was mass notifications back to family members. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And he said they had to collect the personal effects.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they had the two dog tags. One goes on the body and to make sure they're identified.
Right.
And he said that was a job he did not enjoy.
No.
Yeah.
Because you never know this. You could be ending up burying someone that at least you were acquainted with, because
yes.
it could be someone from your unit.
Yes. Well, he said he was walking down, and they had the Marines laid out that were dead, covered by ponchos.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at the boots, and he said, those boots look just like my boots. And he said, my God, I could be one of those Marines.
Yeah. And that's a story that I'm sure is difficult to tell to this
yes,
day.
Yes. Now, Lonnie Cook still lives in Morris, Oklahoma. He's 96 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the Arizona at Pearl Harbor. He's one of 5 still living Arizona survivors.
Mm-hmm.
Then he was put on the USS Hall and was at Iwo Jima.
Okay.
And the Hall bombarded Iwo Jima for 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And we had Marines going ashore at night. So they had these star cluster shells in the guns, and they were lighting up the beaches with the star cluster shells.
Okay.
But then the Japanese attacked with their Zeros.
Mm-hmm.
They had to get the star cluster shells out, get anti-aircraft shells in, trying to change ammunition out. to fight the Zeros.
Yeah, and at that point you are extremely vulnerable because the shells that are left in the magazine are useless.
Yes, and he said, I asked, were you scared? He said, I was too terrified to be scared.
Yep.
And then we have, of course, Bernie Weintraub, as I said, lived in Bartlesville.
Yeah.
Assigned to 32nd Infantry Division, U.S. Army. And he said that they landed after the Marines had already been there, and his job was to clear the caves. And they all had flamethrowers.
Mm-hmm.
Said we had interpreters with us trying to get the Japanese to surrender. None did. He said we just threw grenades in the cave and then used the flamethrower.
Whether it was indoctrination, whether it was the Oriental mindset, these people were not coming out.
Yes. Because you had to die for the emperor.
Right.
And he said that was his job, and he said it still bothers me to this day of how many Japanese we killed in the caves. He said, but I knew they were the enemy, and we had to do it.
Yeah. And that's a burden that the soldiers and Marines carried with them for the rest of their lives, no doubt.
And he said there was not one tree in Iwo Jima with the volcanic sand, but there were sulfur springs. And he said, I knew exactly what hell looks like. Hell looks like Iwo Jima.
Yep. I have heard that quote before. And it's something that, with the sulfur springs and everything, I think if you've visited Yellowstone, you have some idea what it might smell like.
Yes. Now, Eugene Byers lived in Oklahoma City, and he was on the USS Seattle. And he ran a Higgins boat.
Okay.
And he's the one that took the Marines ashore.
Sure.
And he said,
you put yourself at risk several times.
Yes. And he said, he was told, no problem. There's no one on Iwo Jima alive. So he took the Higgins boats ashore. And he said, but the Higgins boat next to him took a direct hit. Everybody in the boat was killed. He said he got his men ashore, went back for the next load. And then there was another Higgins boat beside him. Only one man survived in that Higgins boat. And he said, I survived by the grace of God. He said, the problem was where we're unloading those Marines, we're sitting ducks.
Right. And because you can't move, your whole task is to get those people on shore.
Yes, yes. And Dr. Richard Schlenk was the medical officer on the USS Oklahoma at Pearl Harbor. Got off the Oklahoma.
One of the few.
And he was sent to Iwo Jima, and his job was to set up an aid station on Iwo Jima. We got ashore, the Japanese attacked, and he said, hell, we didn't know what in the hell we were doing. We're under attack, and he said, we just found a couple of bomb craters, and we set up our aid station in the bomb craters. They were bringing Marines in to us, and we were trying to, save their life. And he said he set up a triage. And he identified the Marines that could be saved and the Marines that could not be saved. And said we treated the ones that we knew could be saved. The ones that could not be saved, we set them aside, and we had one of our medics just sit with them until they died.
Yeah, that's really all you can do.
That's all you can do.
If at an aid station, your resources are extremely limited, and you've got to make the best decision both based on the patient and the resources you've got.
Yes, yes. And Bob Radabaugh lived in Bartlesville. He just died last month. And he was a member of E Company, 2nd Battalion, 28th Regiment, 5th Marine Division. And he said they were on the Higgins boat, headed ashore. And they were told it's a cakewalk, no problem. And he had a 30 caliber machine gun. He carried the machine gun. Another Marine carried the tripod. Another man carried the ammunition. They got on the beach, and both men with him were killed. They got replacements, and they got to a shell hole, and he said one of the other replacements was killed. They set up the machine gun. He said, but we didn't know what to shoot. We couldn't see the Japanese because they were in the caves, and he said it took 2 days to get to the base of Mount Suribachi. And he said the Marines were going up the mountain, and we were protecting the Marines going up the hill. And the lieutenant came up and said, get this machine gun up on the mountain. I was there by myself. The other man had been killed. And I said, Lieutenant, I can't carry all this by myself. And he said, get moving. I will not tell you what Bob Radabaugh told the lieutenant.
Under other circumstances, it would have been disciplinary, no doubt.
Yes, but he didn't move. He said, I was in that shell hole and protecting the Marines as best I could. Now, his company, E Company, is famous for raising the flag on Mount Suribachi.
Right.
He said, I knew all those guys. He said, I protected their butts going up the mountain.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's the word he said, but we'll let it go for this morning.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Those men, many of them, you know, survive to this day. And it's their stories that we're trying to tell this morning.
And every one of them said, I'm not a hero. The heroes are still in Iwo Jima.
Yep. And that's the mindset. I personally would disagree with them. I think everyone that was there was a hero, whether they stayed there or came back.
But, yes. Yeah. And Bob Radabaugh has a Japanese flag. And Ira Hayes is one of the flag raisers. He signed the flag and all this. And it was at the Marine Recruiting Office here in Bartlesville for years and years.
Yeah.
And then he just passed away just last month.
Yeah, many people have seen that flag that was displayed there. That's
yes.
neat.
Yes.
We're going to take a short break and continue our time here with Joe in just a moment.
Is it time to start thinking about a new car? But the thought of dealing with the large dealerships is just too intimidating, too confusing? There is an easier way. Tallgrass Motors. Tallgrass Motors doesn't play all the confusing games the large dealerships play. Tallgrass Motors has continually been voted Bartlesville's best used car dealer year after year. Go by Tallgrass Motors today and enjoy looking at over 60 used cars, trucks, and SUVs, all priced to save you money. Tallgrass Motors, Highway 75 North in Bartlesville.
Bartlesville First Baptist Church is focused on the life-changing gospel of Jesus Christ. As we learn the God's Word, love God's people, and live God's mission, this vision will continue to thrive until He comes. We are committed to vibrant worship, relevant Bible teaching, genuine community, and the urgent spreading of this gospel. We are resolved. We will not be silent. Come worship with us at First Baptist Church, 405 South Cherokee in Bartlesville. Services are 8:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. each Sunday.
Again, spending a little bit of time this morning with Joe Todd, remembering area veterans, particularly on, we're getting close to the anniversary of the Battle of Iwo Jima. That was a multi-day affair with the bombing and shelling prior to and then leading up to raising the flag on Mount Suribachi. You got more names for us, right?
Yes, George Jensen was on the USS Lexington, and he was an aircraft mechanic.
Okay.
And his job was to work on the airplanes. They bombed Iwo Jima, came back, and he worked on the airplanes, and they went out again.
Yeah.
Constantly for 10 days.
And if it were not for the work of those mechanics, many of the bombs that were dropped wouldn't have been because of the damage that those aircraft took.
That's right.
Yeah.
Jacob Chassero, who had also been on the Oklahoma, and he was on a destroyer, and he was on a 5-inch gun.
Wow.
And he said they just bombarded Iwo Jima for 10 days solid.
Yeah.
And he said, we did our job because nothing could live through that. But little did they know the cave system on Iwo Jima.
Well, that volcanic rock just doesn't give way.
No, it doesn't. Because it was the Nevada, Ted Kuykendall, said they would fire up Mount Suribachi and they could literally just see the shells just bounce off.
Wow. Most of your interviews were taped interviews. Were any of them video interviews?
They're all video.
Okay. I knew many of them were, but I didn't know how many.
Yes. And they're all at the Eisenhower Library.
Yeah.
I'm a volunteer for the Dwight D. Eisenhower Library.
And just the privilege of talking to so many of those men and women who have served during that time period. You've got some notes here, but a lot of what you're saying is just recall from remembering talking to these folks.
Yes.
What a privilege. What a privilege to talk to
you. And it's my honor. I always thank them. I want to thank you for your service and thank you for the interview. It's been an honor to interview these veterans.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would like to say,
yeah,
it took 25 days to secure Iwo Jima. There were 6,821 Marines, Army, and Navy personnel killed. Over 19,000 were injured. And about 21,000 Japanese were killed. Only 216 prisoners were taken. The Japanese.
I'm surprised, really, we got that many.
Yes, And after Iwo Jima was taken, 2,251 B-29s landed, 1,191 fighter escorts and 3,081 strike sorties were flown from Iwo Jima to attack Japan.
Wow. What a critical base of operations that became.
Yes.
These veterans, these people that have been described as the greatest generation, they just... you really have to, I'm sure, in times to draw out the information from them. They're often not really willing to tell their story.
Well, like Lonnie Cook didn't want to be interviewed, and I told him, I said, now remember, when you die, your story dies with you.
Yeah.
And he thought, you know, that's right.
Yeah. And it's these individual stories that really tell the stories of the people of
yes.
what, you know, otherwise, it's the rest of it's just dates and names in a history book.
Yes. And they're all so humble. I was just doing my job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they enlisted and they were part of whatever organization, my 5th Marine Division or whatever that they were part
That's right.
And I think that's how they saw themselves, part of a larger group.
Yes.
You and I have had the opportunity twice this month so far to talk about these veterans many of them, we're talking about one or two stories of an individual veteran, but their stories of service go on a lot longer than that. Obviously, many of them were part of, you know, 4 years or more of military service.
Oh, yes, and yeah. Some of them were in the major battles, several major battles.
Yeah.
And survived.
Calendar-wise, the month of March, there just really weren't any significant battles in World War II that you have interviews to talk about. So it's going to be April before we get to
April,
talk.
April, about the Bataan Death March.
Wow. Talk about another date in history.
Yes.
Joe, thank you so much for bringing the stories of these veterans, many of whom have now passed away, mm-hmm. so that we can remember them and what they did for this country. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Spending a little bit of time this morning with Joe Todd on a Community Connection this morning. If you make it to the Eisenhower Library, these stories are archived there, and I know Joe has had published a couple of publications that you can find out more about these veterans. But again, thanks to their families many a times for referring these men and women to Joe so they can be interviewed and we can hear their stories today. 59 degrees. News on the way next from the Oklahoma News Network.
ONN News, I'm Jacqueline.